Welcome to Loco, a weekly conversation celebrating the stories of unconventional yet phenomenal single women expats. Today I speak with the self-love muse, Melody Kearse. We talk about her pursuit of aliveness in Paris. Thanks, Melody. Thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate you showing up.
It's my pleasure.
So we're going to get started by me asking you to tell us a bit about yourself, where you're from.
Sure. So I'm originally from Buenos Aires in Argentina, and I grew up there. I went to school there, everything, until I was 18. And then I moved to New York to study, and I was there for 15 years. So I'm a little bit of a mix. I would say I'm, mix Argentine-American sort of situation.
And so did you come to America with your family, or were you, was that something that you did as an independent?
You know, it was actually a mixed situation because I was actually planning on moving out of Argentina and studying abroad since I was like 13. I grew up with a family that traveled a lot, and I don't know, I think it was just in my blood. And so I already had plans to leave, but it just so happened that around the same time I was planning to go study abroad, and I decided I was going to study fashion design at Parsons in New York. So right about the same time, things got really, really, really bad in Argentina in terms of like the economy and socially speaking, and it got really unsafe. And so my family actually ended up moving to the States, to Florida, right about the same time that I moved to New York. And so in that sense, you know, it made things a lot easier in terms of visas and things like that, because I would have had to get a student visa on my own otherwise. But since my family moved there as well, I ended up getting lucky and sort of just being a dependent under my dad's visa at that point.
Interesting. So how long were you in New York?
I was in New York for 15 years.
Studying fashion. And how did that work out for you?
So I was studying fashion. I was at Parsons for 2 years. And, you know, I think it was a combination of different things that happened where I sort of started doubting myself. I also sort of started doubting that that's what I wanted to do. Just seeing how the industry works, and also seeing, I think I kind of got disappointed about having to make things that will sell as opposed to creating wearable art. And so I kind of left, I left Parsons 2 years in, and I transferred to NYU, to one of the schools there. It's called Gallatin. And Gallatin is really cool because they let you make your own major. And so I actually majored on happiness. So that's where I finished my degree.
Cute. Happiness. That's interesting. I didn't know that bit. So you left New York and went, where'd you go after New York?
So I'm in Paris at this point. Okay. I just moved here 2 months ago, and I'm super excited that I'm here. I've been wanting to move here for a while after 15 years in New York. You know, I mean, it's a fantastic city. I think once you've lived in New York, you know, it's New York. Like, there's no replacing that. But sometimes you just want something different, and that's the case for me. So I decided that I needed to get out and do something else, and I came to Paris.
Tell us a bit about how you chose Paris specifically and how you were able to stay there.
There's so many different threads for me. I think part of it is Paris just feels like home to me, and I think that, like I said, I was feeling called to come to Europe for a long time, but I didn't know where. And so I decided to just come on a trip and sort of put myself in the different cities that I thought might be a good option for me. And I went to Stockholm, I went to Amsterdam, I went to Berlin, I went to Barcelona, you know, and a lot of them, you know, just really wonderful cities. But, you know, it was kind of like, oh yeah, you know, I could see myself here, but it wasn't this like, yeah. And when I got to Paris, it was like, yeah, this is it. And, you know, if I think about it, it can be partly I feel at home, I think, because it feels like Paris is kind of a blend between New York and Buenos Aires. And because Buenos Aires has a lot of French influence and a lot of Parisian influence in terms of the lifestyle, in terms of the architecture. And then, you know, at the same time, Paris is a totally cosmopolitan city with lots of culture and things to do and things like that, like New York. And so that just felt, I just feel like very, very at home here. But the other portion, which I think is sort of the stronger pull, is that I kind of left my inner artist behind when I left Parsons. And I'd been wanting to give that more space in my life for the last few years. But because New York is New York and the hustle is strong and the mentality, you know, is very like, I'll be the king of the hill, top of the heap, you know, like the song says, I just felt like I didn't have the space emotionally and mentally and spiritually and financially and like time-wise to really make space for me to explore and play and see what is it that I want to create. What is it that wants to emerge through me in terms of like this creative impulse that I feel like is inside me. And I just decided that if that was the case and that's important to me, I needed to do what I need to do in order to make that happen. And I had a few situations with people that I know that unfortunately like passed away really, really suddenly and in freak accidents that really sort of put things into perspective. I think that, you know, when one is young, I'm still young, but it's like when you're younger, you're just kind of like, oh, I'm going to live forever and I have all the time in the world. But as you get older, you start really coming face to face with the fact that not only do you not have all the time in the world because you will die at some point, but you don't actually know when and it might happen sooner than you think. And so, you know, it just kind of put a fire under my ass and I was like, well, I don't want to go without knowing what it is that wants to come through me. And if it means that I need to move countries, then I'm going to move countries. And so at that point, it was just a matter of figuring out the paperwork. And again, I was super, super, super lucky. At first, I was looking at doing a long-term visitor visa because I work remotely and I can sustain myself that way. And that's one option. I was also looking at doing a student visa because, you know, I have to learn French anyway, so I might as well just sign up for a school that would recognize me as a student and sign up for the student visa. But it turns out that I was eligible for the Polish citizenship based on my heritage. So I had a great grandfather who was Polish, and it turns out that I could actually confirm my Polish citizenship, which essentially means that you were always Polish and Poland just didn't know it. So you're just telling the Polish government or whatever government you're eligible for, hey, I am Polish and you need to recognize this. And so I did that whole process and I got myself an EU passport.
Okay. And as I was listening to you, there were a few things that I want to explore. Mm-hmm. One being the artist. Mm-hmm. As an artist myself, I completely understand and relate to the need to have space to allow things to emerge. So you've only been in Paris a couple months.
Yes.
How have you felt or how are you experiencing the breath that you have at this point? Are you finding a flow or are you still sort of in this transitional state of moving out of the New York state of mind and into the flow that Paris allows you? And also being Argentinian, I'm sure that it's inherent, but could you expound upon that more?
You know, one of the things with France is that, I don't know if people know this or they've heard this, but the French bureaucracy is a whole other level. So I'm definitely feeling, you know, more spaciousness in terms of how I live my life. And, you know, the mentality here is not so much, like people don't define themselves so much by what they do for work. And so emotionally and mentally, that leaves them space to actually have a life outside of work. So it makes a difference for me because I'm kind of like a sponge. Like I'll absorb whatever I'm around. And I do notice that you know, when I come back from traveling and I was coming back to New York and, you know, going out traveling and then coming back to New York again, every time I came back, I could sort of sustain that mentality that we have when we are travelers, you know, that's more about being in the moment and following your intuition and enjoying things for what they are in the moment and the different experiences and being in awe and, you know, just kind of valuing experiences over achievements in a way. And then I would notice that about 3 weeks in into being in New York, I would start having these thoughts of like, you know, what are you doing? And you're not good enough. And everybody's doing this or that or whatever. And just start to compare myself. And I don't have that here. You know, I don't have that here because there's more of an acceptance that there's all sorts of different ways that you can make money. And it doesn't mean whatever way you make money is not your whole identity. And so that's really helpful. In terms of, you know, my artistic side, I've been exploring. So one thing that I love to do is make pottery. So I've been exploring the classes that are available around here. Also, something that's really amazing is that the Paris city itself offers a lot of classes that are low cost, both for like language, not just French, but also other languages. Also, they offer like tech classes and like business administration classes. And they also offer art classes, like different kinds of restoration and textile design and fashion design even and things like that. So I've been exploring all of my options. And there's a few other organizations that also offer other kinds of like art classes. And one that I'm really excited about is a furniture restoration class, which I'm hoping I can sign up for because, oh my God, like how fun to find like some old thing, you know, that needs some love and then, you know, get creative and make it awesome again. That just sounds really fun to me. And I'm super excited about that. And so I'm kind of in this transition exploration mode still, but I do notice that, you know, in terms of my mentality, in terms of how I'm going about my day, there is a difference. And, you know, I'm very liable to be very self-critical. And so I'm less so here, I think.
That's fantastic. You know, that's to be cherished. So at one point you said you were considering doing a long-term visa that wasn't related to being a student. And prior to understanding that you could apply for the Polish passport, can you tell us how you sustain yourself?
I do two things. One of them is I'm a contractor for a company that does matchmaking. And so I'm a matchmaker. And this company, you know, the team is really supportive and pretty much all of us matchmakers are able, you know, we're all kind of traveling around the world because the company is super supportive in terms of allowing us to live our own lives as long as we're providing the service that we were hired to provide. And, you know, it's a 1099 position. It's a US-based company and I get paid into my US bank account. And I can work from anywhere in the world as long as I have an internet connection and I can make phone calls. So that's one side of the equation. The other side is that I do work, I call myself a self-love muse. And so I work with people who have a very self-critical mentality, you know, who are perfectionists, who are beating themselves up about their appearance or about their accomplishments or lack thereof, about their weight, about, you know, whatever it is that they don't like about themselves. And I work with them. I work online and also in person, and I lead retreats. And I work with them to support them in letting go of what's blocking them, of those ways in which they're getting in their own way of actually being happy with who they are and having more freedom and self-expression in their life so that they're not feeling unsupported or feeling like they need to hide who they are in order to have love and acceptance in their life. And so, you know, I have a little bit of a mix of it's technically both are self-employed because I am a contractor, but, you know, it helps to have that extra sort of 1099 job because, you know, it's a little bit more safety in terms of not putting so much pressure to have to find new clients all the time and things like that because the company takes care of the client acquisition part of things for the matchmaking. So, yeah, it's a good blend.
Interesting matchmaker.
Yeah.
I happen to be single, but I'm not mingling at this point. What's the name of your business?
So I'm kind of going through a transition right now. So I'm going with my own name at the moment, Melody Kearse. And what I offer is self-love mastery.
Okay, self-love mastery. You know, one thing I appreciate about you, and I mentioned this to you before, but one thing I appreciate about you is that you seem to be really grounded and in tune in a way that you're conscious in a way that you actually hear. In our prior conversation leading up to this, I really felt you were in tune. You were listening. And oftentimes people today, I find, aren't really listening. They're more interested in what's going on inside their heads and what they need for you to do for them. So everything you've said this far really touches home with me specifically. So I think you are qualified. You are definitely qualified to help others connect in a meaningful way. So good luck with that. Good luck with the business. Good luck with matchmaking, but good luck with helping others as well, you know?
Thank you. You know, last night I did the first new moon circle here in Paris, and we had about 10 women who showed up, and, you know, some had been to a circle before and some didn't know what it was about. And essentially, it's just women gathering together to support each other and reconnect with the cycles of nature, because we're always so in society, like we're always focused on achieving and always going higher and higher and higher. And that's just not the way that nature works. You know, nature has its cycles of like growth and peak and then decay and then death and then rebirth. And that's more natural. But we tend to resist that. And so I like these circles for that. And so I'm excited to hold more of these. And if anybody who's listening is around in Paris, you know, please look me up and I'll invite you.
Sounds great. I appreciate the invite. Because Paris is my city in ways, and it's often a place that I consider exploring more as well. So I may pop up at one of these sister circles.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. So we're going to move on. And this is the part where you get to share with us some of your favorites around Paris, at least the ones that you've been able to gather since you've been there or on your visits before. So you ready for that?
Yep. Let's do it.
Okay. So what's your favorite place to get breakfast or a bit of brunch?
So there's this place, it's called Pause Cafe. That's easy. It's not in French. and it's on Rue de Charonne. And it's a great place. I love it because their food is fantastic. Their prices are reasonable. And also they happen to be on a little corner where they have a lot of space on the sidewalk, and the sun, when the sun comes out in Paris, actually makes it to that part of the sidewalk. So it's a really great place, especially in the spring or the summer when it is sunny in Paris. It's so fantastic. And even when it's not, I just love that place. It's a great, fantastic place to have brunch.
So that's your favorite cafe. Are you a tea or a coffee girl?
You know, I oscillate. Depends. Like if it's before 3 p.m., I'll have a coffee for sure. If it's after, I'll probably have a tea. You know, I can't handle the caffeine after a certain time.
So do you have a favorite coffee or tea shop that you like to frequent?
It just depends, right? So I will have to admit that the coffee in Paris, unless you go to one of those sort of more hipstery coffee places, is not the best. It's usually kind of bitter and burnt and, you know, but for me, it's just kind of, it's almost like a Paris coffee brand that it's going to be crappy coffee. So I enjoy it anyway. There's one place that I really like that's called Café La Part. And it's just kind of like a very sort of a local place, you know, so it's just, you're not going to see any tourists there because it's not in the tourist part of town. It's on Boulevard Voltaire. And I just love it because of that, because I feel like I'm immersed in the real Paris. Then there's the other place that I absolutely adore, and their coffee is amazing. And they also have fantastic brunch and food in general. It's called Café Bouvette. And Bouvette is actually, it was started, there's one in New York in the West Village. And so they have a sister gastropub, as they call it, here in Paris. And I love the ambiance. The food is amazing. And the coffee is also outstanding. So those are my picks.
So do you have a favorite place to people watch?
Not a lot of people know this, but there is a High Line of sorts in Paris. And actually the High Line in New York City came after the one here. And it was kind of in a way inspired by the one here. And it's really nice. You know, it's an old railroad and that was converted to a nice little park. And it's lovely to sit there and just people watch. And that's called La Coulée Verte. And then the other place that I absolutely love to go is a very touristy spot, but also it's a place where Parisians also go. And so that's in the Jardin des Tuileries, which is right next to the Louvre. There are a couple fountains on those parks. And, you know, at the end of the day, when it's not super cold out or raining, people just go and sit around the fountain and they just sort of sit and do nothing. And it's amazing. Like, I don't see people doing, like, they're not on their phones. They might be reading a book, but sometimes not even. Like, they're just sitting there, you know, just enjoying the fresh air. And it's, I just find it amazing because I just feel like, you know, we're always taught to just go, go, go in the States. And I'm just always in awe when people just sit and do nothing for a bit. I just think it's great.
Likewise, that's one of my favorite pastimes, actually. Some may see it as lazy, but I don't. I see it as really enjoying myself, my actual self, and space and time. So,
absolutely, you know,
it's a great thing.
And I think it's actually, you know, I try to teach that to my clients as well, because it's actually really good for your brain, because it's not getting input, you know. It's like when are you letting your brain just be? Like, even when you're meditating, you're still practicing something. But to just sit and let your mind wander, like, it's just amazing. And it just gives your brain a break. And I find it super necessary. And in fact, I find that my best ideas come when I just let my brain do that, you know? There's a lot of inspiration that comes at that time.
Do you have a favorite upscale dining restaurant?
You know, I would say that even though Café Bouvet is not really super upscale, it kind of has that atmosphere where it feels very rich and luxurious to me, even though their pricing is not actually that high. There's another place that's just right down the street from there called Les Affranchis. And I had one of my best meals there. And again, it's interesting, you know, because it's not, you can get such great food for not exorbitant prices. I can't say that I have been to, you know, one of the Michelin star places yet, but, you know, maybe later on. But that Les Affranchis was just amazing. And it was, I don't know, maybe like 40 euro or something like that for a 3-course meal. So super affordable.
We have to know, do you have a favorite patisserie?
There's, you know, I don't know the name of it. It's actually right around the corner from where I live. And they were voted like best croissant in like Paris for several years in a row. But I don't remember the name of it. It's on Rue Saint-Antoine.
Maybe I can find the name of it as well, because I can include it in the notes. Okay, so when I was in Paris, well, I was dating a Frenchman, but he had the ritual of going for a baguette at a specific bakery every Saturday. Have you found your favorite baguette? have you found your favorite place to pick up some bread?
There is a place, I personally eat gluten-free, which is absolute sacrilege here in France. Though I do cheat sometimes because I'm in France. there's a place that's called Du Pain et des Idées. So that means of bread and of ideas. And that has amazing bread. They have a fantastic bread that's a brioche with orange flower blossom or something like that. And I'm not really an orange flower blossom kind of girl, but that thing was amazing. Like, it was so yummy. I really had to hold myself from like finishing the whole loaf by myself in a day. Like, you know, I mean, the bread is amazing here, but you shouldn't be having like that much bread all the time.
Perfect. Did you see that Macron has actually petitioned to protect the word baguette?
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't read the article, but I think my understanding is kind of like, you know, how champagne is only from Champagne and then things like that. And I think he just wants to make sure that there's a standard.
Right. Like, yeah, like French lentils. Those mm-hmm. are specifically grown in, I think, a certain kind of soil even.
Yeah, they're big on the soil here. It's like because, you know, even with the wines, that's another thing that I'm definitely going to do is take a wine class and the cheese class, because the soil gives a completely different flavor to things. And so, yeah, you know, a wine from the same kind of grape, but in a different region is going to give you a different kind of wine. So yeah, they're big on that. It's called terroir. That's essentially what it means. It means it's like, you know, from that particular piece of land.
That's a great segue, because my next question is about wine bars or cocktail bars. Do you have a favorite?
There is a place that I really love to go dancing that has great cocktails as well. It's called Le Ballroom, and they, you know, they have really great music and they have awesome cocktails. There's also the Experimental Cocktail Club. They also have fantastic things. And then there's the other place, which is called Le Comptoir Général, and that's near the Canal Saint-Martin, which is also actually a fantastic place to people watch, especially in the summer, because everybody makes picnics over there. It's like the thing to do is to sit next to the canal and have your baguette and cheese and wine with your friends. And so Le Comptoir Général is like this, they have great music to dance to, but also like very lively sort of bar scene. And it's decorated almost like a jungly sort of place. So it transports you to somewhere else. And it's really fun.
We know that Paris is also a great hub for shopping. With you being a person that's in fashion, I'm sure you've picked up some spots where you patronizing local designers or local producers. Do you have your favorites?
So right now, because I just got here, I have been exploring more of, there's like different bazaars and things like that. And then of course, there's like right this moment, there's twice a year, France has this thing and where there's a law where the businesses cannot sell things from the last season. And so twice a year, they're mandated to have these crazy sales. So right now is one of the times in January where they're having all these crazy sales. So everything is like 50% off, 70% off. So if you're coming to Paris in January, like you're in luck. Also, I think the other one is more towards the end of the summer. And so that's like where I've been going right now. So there's this one part of town where there's all these little bazaars where you can get things that are brand name for a lot less money. And that is along Faubourg Saint-Antoine. And it's between the two metro stops, Les Drou Roland, and this other stop that I don't really know how to pronounce, but I'll give it a chance. I think it's something like Faubourg Chaligny. And that's on line 8 of the metro. And there's all these little shops, whether it's for like kitchen stuff or clothing or shoes or things like that. It's just all a lot of stores right there. And then a bonus, which I haven't mentioned, is that the Marché d'Alire is right there. And this is a farmer's market. And it's the best market in Paris, as far as I'm concerned. Their produce is amazing and the prices are ridiculous. Like I walk away with a bag full of vegetables for like nothing, for like 10 euro. And they have like, for example, it's like 4 avocados for 2 euro. It's crazy. I mean, I remember paying $5 for one avocado in New York. So 4 for $2 is like unheard of for me. So I really recommend that as well. And then as far as more sort of brand name shopping, there's a lot of the places around Rue de Rivoli, and that's all along the one line of the metro, just between like Hôtel de Ville and where does it end? More like Châtelet. So there's tons and tons and tons of stores there. It's like never ending shopping. It's kind of like 34th Street on in Manhattan.
And can you name the open or spell the open air market and the shop you just mentioned?
Sure. So the Marché d'Alire is MARCHE space D apostrophe ALIGRE. And then the street actually where you can find all the little bazaars is called Faubourg Saint-Antoine. And then the other one where more like the brand name places are is Rue de Rivoli. Now, if you want more sort of independent, you know, designers or like even more like the bigger sort of more designer-y brand names that are not as commercial, the best place for that is in Le Marais. And that's kind of like the equivalent of something like Soho in New York. And so you have all of the designer boutiques in that area, and that's the best place to go.
So a quick question before we get too far away from this topic. We know that, I know from experience that traditionally each shop has its specialty. So you'll have, you know, the bakery, you'll have the butcher, you'll have the fishmonger. Do you have any sort of like, as a side note, do you have any favorites for those specific items that, you know, we usually get from one-stop shops here in the States?
Sure. So there's a cheese shop, a fromagerie, that is on Rue de Bretagne, and it's called Jona or something like that. And they have this amazing, amazing aged Comté that it's addictive. I mean, cheese is already addictive enough, but this is like, cannot stop eating it. It's ridiculous. Like, you should not buy a huge piece because you will eat it all in one sitting. It's better to just go like every day and get a little bit, as far as I'm concerned. And then there's a place that's right across the street from there that's what's called a traiteur. And so they have prepared foods that is delicious. And they have this rotisserie chicken that is amazing. And it's €5 for half a chicken or €10 for the whole thing. And, you know, if you're just wanting to take something somewhere, you know, for dinner or something like that, it's just really good, really good quality. And it's delicious and it's been slow cooked. And I think I probably have their chicken at least once a week. And so I highly recommend those.
I remember you saying that you've only been in France a couple months, but have you spotted any hidden gems or favorite neighborhoods or favorite local spots?
Local spots. I spend a lot of time, another cafe, you know, I mean, it's Paris, it's cafe life. So another cafe I spend a lot of time at is the Café de la Poste, and that's on Rue de Touraine. I really enjoy that. Another thing that I love to do is actually, you know, it is a touristy place, but I love to go early, early, early in the morning when nobody's there yet. And that is to go up to Sacré-Cœur before, like, you know, almost like right after the sunrise, because it's just amazing to be up on that hill and watch the city wake up. You know, and it's so silent, but you just watch the city wake up. It's amazing before all the tourists show up, of course, because then it gets pretty noisy. And then, you know, other neighborhoods that I love, it's like, I love the 11th. I love like that street where Post Cafe is, Rue de Charonne. I love that street. It also has all these little independent shops and little cafes and little restaurants and things like that. And I also love the 10th arrondissement. And it's a little bit more kind of like what they call here Bobo, which is it's similar to the hipster. So that's like that area. And then in the 9th, it's a little bit quieter. It's more residential. And I just really enjoy that. Like, if you want to hang out in more of a local spot, I would go to the 9th arrondissement. I really enjoy that. And then if you do go to Montmartre, where Sacré-Cœur is, and, you know, the whole artist side of things, you know, the sort of the front of the hill is more of the touristy part. But if you go to the back, is more of the local part. And it's also really nice to kind of get lost. It's really my favorite thing to do. Like when, you know, it's not super cold out, to just get out and get lost in the streets of Paris is absolutely amazing. And you always find some, you know, little gem or several, because the city's just full of them. And one of the things that's amazing about Paris is that even though it is a totally cosmopolitan city, it feels like a village. It actually doesn't feel that big, you know, and people relate to each other a little bit more as if it was a village in some ways. At least, you know, for me coming from New York, I'm sure that if somebody comes from a smaller town, they might argue with that. But, you know, just the fact that you walk into a store and people actually say hello to you and things like that, it feels a little bit more personal.
One thing I always loved about my time in Paris was the light. It seems that the light that emanates from the sky is surreal. And I don't know what it is, but for me, just the natural light, it felt different. It seemed really different. And I'm not sure if you've experienced something like that, but that's my experience of meandering around and being in space and time was the light.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think that, I mean, I can tell you right now, well, actually the sun came out today, but during winter, it's rare that we do see a blue sky. I actually had a friend of mine who went to Barcelona and like he posted a picture to Facebook and you know, it was all sunny skies. And I was like, what is that? What is that blue thing? Because we don't see it very often when it's winter here. But when you do, it's absolutely amazing. And I think it's a combination of that particular, almost like, you know, that French blue sky. But also, you know, because the architecture here is so sort of homogeneous, you know, and the colors, it just makes everything stand out. Like, you know, because the buildings are pretty neutral. It's kind of, you know, white and gray. And then anything that's a color just sort of gets highlighted even more strongly. And that's one of the things also that inspire me so much about being here. You know, it's just, there's just a real care for aesthetics and for beauty. And I'm one of those people that gets really fed by that. So I'm very happy to be here.
Fantastic. And I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
So we know the reputation that France has in terms of the people and their attitude, or shall I say that they aren't known as being the most friendly people. That wasn't my experience. But I guess, could you just speak to how that is for you? Well, never mind.
No, I think I have an interesting point of view on that.
Well, the French are known for their attitude and not being the most hospitable and friendly people. Do you have any sort of experience that's counter to that? Or would you say that has been your experience?
It's so funny because, yeah, I mean, I definitely have an experience of French. When it comes to social sort of circles, I do notice that most of my friends here are not French. But at the same time, you know, a lot of people say that the French are so arrogant or the French are so rude. And I actually think that's more of a cultural misunderstanding, because especially, you know, when people are coming from the States, where it's a culture that's a lot more transactional, where it's like, I'm going to go in, I'm going to ask you for what I need, you're going to give it to me, I'm going to pay you, and then I'm going to go. And here, it's not like that. It's more of a relationship-based culture. It's a Latin country. So if you walk into a store and you don't treat the person, or a restaurant or a cafe or whatever, and you don't treat the person like they are a human being, like you just treat them like they're a server or, you know, some way for you to get something as opposed to a person, they're going to think you're the one that's being rude and they're going to treat you like crap. So, you know, like there's this cultural misunderstanding where the French think that the Americans are rude, the Americans think that the French are rude, and it's really just this misunderstanding. And, you know, if you walk into a store and you actually say bonjour, you know, if you treat people with respect and like they're a human being, then you're not going to have that experience. And that's for me what I have here. And I think that part of that for me is because I'm from Argentina, and that's the way that we relate in Argentina as well. Like, I cannot tell you how many times, you know, we would walk into a store with my mom and she would like tell our whole life history to the person who was working. And it's just like, you know, that's just the way that it is. And you're a person, and you're not just there for a transaction. And so I think that if people make an effort in that sense, and also if they make an effort to actually speak a little bit of French, you know, even if it's just saying hello and like, I will have a coffee or something like that, it just really goes a long way. People really appreciate that here. So I think that, you know, it's just a little bit elbow grease in terms of how you relate, and then you'll have a completely different experience when you're in France.
Right. And can we just transition or pivot into, I won't sort of go into the museum culture, but have you found any galleries that you are drawn to and like?
You know, I haven't actually. I can tell you about my favorite museum, Musée d'Orsay. It's a smaller museum. It's right on the other side of the Seine from the Louvre. And I love it because it's actually, you can actually do it in a day, and their collection is fantastic. And the building used to be a train station, so it's gorgeous. So I really highly recommend it if you're, you know, if it's a rainy day or you just want to do a museum but you don't want to be lost there for like years, then I recommend the Musée d'Orsay. It's really nice.
What about events? How do you get in touch with the happenings that are going on in the city?
Happenings. So Facebook is a great tool for that, of course. And also I'm lucky that I do have some friends here who've been living here a little bit longer than me. So I do get invited to different things, and I have a few friends who are DJs, so they'll invite me to different things like that. But other ways to find out is to actually just talk to people. It's really amazing. Like, you know, I don't know, people actually talk to each other. Like, you know, if you're at a cafe and there's people, because the tables are so close together anyway, they obviously you're going to overhear everything everybody else is saying. So, you know, it's just, people are just very ready to connect in that way. And yeah, I think that mostly right now, that's how I've been finding events. But there's also, of course, always like bulletin boards and things like that. But I think that most people nowadays, you know, even the bulletin boards kind of like are on Facebook. So that's the way that I've been going about it. Nothing very exciting, unfortunately.
Then that's okay. It's no problem. What would you say is a great day trip for a visitor?
There's tons of little towns right around Paris. Like if you take the local, the suburban trains, then you can just go to one of the little towns that are nearby, and they're super quaint. And, you know, I don't know, like I felt like I was in Beauty and the Beast, you know, or something like that. Because it's all these stone buildings and, you know, like typical French little town. And it's really great. And then, of course, there's other places that you can go, like Normandy and things like that. You can do, it's a little bit further away, but you can do it in a day if you don't mind like waking up super early and then arriving later in the day. But there's also lots of stuff around there. And there's like Mont Saint-Michel, of course. So that's a little bit further away. But, you know, and then there's, of course, the typical, which is the Versailles Castle or Palace, I should say. So that's also available. And that's also about like, I think it's like 40 minutes or something like that on the train from the center of Paris. It's not far at all.
What would you say is one faux pas with regard to etiquette that a visitor should know and avoid?
So there's a really funny thing that I learned from a book that's called French or Faux that actually explains all of these little like miscommunications and misunderstandings that are culturally based. But one of the things that I thought was so funny is that when you're sitting, for example, at a dinner table and you're with a bunch of people. So in a lot of places, it's rude to have your hands on the table. But actually in France, it's rude to have them under the table because, well, you don't know what's going on and like what people are doing with those hands under the table. So, you know, it's a very French thing. And I think it's hilarious. So always keep your hands in, you know, visible range when you're at a dinner party.
Hilarious.
The French, they're pretty funny.
Funny. So I guess we've arrived at the part where I'd like to say it's been a pleasure. But before we go, tell listeners where they can find you.
So my name is Melody Cures, and you can find me at melodycures.com. That is also my Instagram and Facebook handle. So you can also search for me like that. And, you know, that's where you can find me for self-love mastery for all the programs that I have. I'm actually putting together an awesome program for women to really get in touch with their bodies and with their self-expression and, you know, stop letting their fears of being too much get in the way of them shining really brightly. And so that's where people can find me for that. And then for the matchmaking, I work with a company called Talkify, and you can email me at melody@talkify.com. If you are interested in either becoming part of our network of singles, which is absolutely free of charge, or if you're interested in becoming a client, or if you're interested in becoming a matchmaker, because I know that a lot of the people who will be listening to this are digital nomads. So if you are interested in a job like what I have with Talkify, please do get in touch because we're always hiring.
Fantastic. Well, it's been such a pleasure. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, and I really appreciate you taking time to, again, show up and give us perspective in terms of the new city that you call home.
Well, I'm super excited. I love the city, so I'm always happy to share. And, you know, even if people are listening to this and, you know, if you want to shoot me an email and like get a recommendation for something, please do, because I think I'm just a mama bear. Like, I just love making people feel at home, whether it's in their body or in a new city or whatever. So I'm happy to share all of what I know. And thank you. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome. You're absolutely welcome. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you found this local's perspective informative and even inspiring. If so, please consider subscribing to Loco using iTunes or your favorite Android podcast player. If you have any comments or questions, or even a story you'd like to submit, please connect with us at loco.co, that's LOCAUX.CO. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.